Thank you for listening to this week's sermon podcast by Dr. John Hanna. It is our hope and prayer that you will be encouraged in your faith and in your walk with Jesus. For more information, please go to springfieldchurch.org. Here now is the most recent message.
Please turn in your Gospels to the Gospel of Mark. Mark chapter 15. We've made it to Mark chapter 15. Can you believe it? Some of you doubted me. Some of you thought we were just going to be stuck in the middle of Mark for a long time, but we are in Mark chapter 15. We are nearing the end, and I'm excited. As you're turning to Mark chapter 15, I'm feeling a little emotional and quite a bit proud this morning. I've got some pictures I want to show you, and I'll share with you why I'm feeling pretty emotional this morning. These are my friends Steve and Chris. They live in Denver. I grew up with Chris in church since, you know, from the time we were little, and so I've known her for many, many years. My freshman year in high school, Steve and his family showed up to church, and we just connected as best friends, and he has been one of my dearest friends for so many years. They ended up getting married, and they had four boys.
Wow.
Yeah, and they have many grandchildren. This is them with one of their grandchildren. He's just adorable. And their daughter-in-law. These are pictures all from yesterday. And they have landed in New York City. They'd never been there before. It's a beautiful day yesterday, and it's a beautiful day today. I told Steve, because I've never been to New York City, I want to go. But I said, send me as many pictures as you can. Now, I told you they had four boys. This is their youngest, Noah. And this is his baby. I'm a little emotional because I have known Noah ever since he was his son's age, you know. And it's just crazy how this happens. I love this next picture. Isn't that a great picture? With the New York skyline in the back. Love that picture. Now, why are they in New York? They are in New York because Noah today is running the New York City Marathon.
Wow.
He has been training for months. I've been kind of seeing some of his Instagram training. And mom and dad and his wife, baby went out to support him. Pretty cool to do that. I'm not a runner. I will never be a runner. So I will run vicariously through you. Noah sent me a couple short videos I want to show you. This is the beginning of the race.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave for the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Pretty cool. This is just this morning. And the next video is a short one, but you'll see Noah at the very end. He does the peace sign for us. They're off and running. There he is. I just wanted to share that with you because for the last many months, we've been talking about running the race of faith. I'm so proud of Noah for doing this and proud of mom and dad for being able to go and support him. But as he is right now running the New York City Marathon, we also are running a race. It's the race of faith. And it's not easy. And there are times that we're going to want to quit or throw in the towel. But the Word of God gives us every promise and reassurance that we can continue to be persistent and faithful and endure this race of faith, no matter the challenges we face. So, we're going to continue to run this race of faith. And Mark, the Gospel of Mark, is helping us stay on track and to give us the direction that we need to go, regardless of the obstacles that we face. So I'm going to read to you from Mark chapter 15, the first 15 verses in a message this morning I'm entitling, The Switch. Mark 15, beginning at verse 1. Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin made their plans. So they bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. "Are you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate. "You have said so," Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again, Pilate asked him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accusing you of?" But Jesus still made no reply. And Pilate was amazed. Now it was the custom at the festival to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man called Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of self-interest that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to him. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with the one whom you call the king of the Jews?" Pilate asked him. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him!" Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Lord, if we were part of that mob that day, it's anyone's guess what we would have shouted. Would any of us have been brave enough to say, "Release Jesus"? I don't know. I'd like to think that would be me, but I know myself pretty well. I probably would have joined the mob. It was an ugly scene. It was a noisy scene. It was a chaotic scene. And from the outside looking in, it looks pretty hopeless. But you have a way of redeeming and restoring things that are hopeless. You have a way of fixing things when they have gone out of control. You have a way of restoring things that have spiraled so downward that there seems to be no hope. And maybe there's someone here today, maybe there's a couple here today, maybe there are several people here today, and they are in a hopeless situation. You are the God that can restore all things. And even in the middle of a chaotic situation as this scene is, I pray, God, that we will find those glimpses of hope and restoration that can only come about when you step into the messiness and craziness of a situation and begin to bring good out of evil. That's our hope today. And all God's people said, amen. I know this is going to surprise many of you, but before I met Renee, I really didn't date all that much. And I know that surprises you because, you know, you think of a younger, slimmer John with a full head of hair. You can see where the ladies would be quite interested, but I really didn't date all that much. Renee was my first and only girlfriend. In high school, I just dated, maybe went on a few dates, just a handful of times. I did, in college, date a little bit more, nothing serious. I did date two twins, Renelle and Rochelle. Not at the same time, of course. That would not have worked out well. And that was interesting. I don't know if you've ever dated twins before, but you kind of have to be careful what you say to one, because what you say to one will be easily passed on to the other. And I think they kind of tricked me a couple times and maybe switched. I'm not sure if I could tell the difference between Renelle and Rochelle. But looking back, I think they may have pulled a switcheroo on me a couple times. Obviously, nothing ever came of Renelle and Rochelle. And we'll get to what it means to switch later. But looking at this passage here in Mark chapter 15, We begin with this second trial of Jesus. A few weeks ago, we talked about the first trial of Jesus and the farce that was between Jesus and the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin was the religious ruling body at the time, and they brought all kinds of false accusations against Jesus and made all kinds of false claims. It was an unfair trial, and now we see Jesus here in front of Pilate, more of a governmental trial that was really pushed and egged on by the Sanhedrin. And we see this interesting interaction between the powerful Pilate and Jesus. And what's interesting here in this passage that really boggles my mind is how little Jesus said when questioned by Pilate. Jesus, when asked by Pilate, "Are you the king of the Jews?" says, "You have said so." And then Pilate says, "The chief priests have accused you of many things. Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accusing you of?" And look at verse 5. Verse 5 is absolutely astonishing to me here in Mark chapter 15. Jesus made no reply. And Pilate was amazed. When people say garbage about you, and they have, when people talk bad about you and accuse you of false things and say untrue things about you, what's our first response? To defend ourselves, to speak up, to say, "No, that's not true." That's a lesson I have yet to learn. I mean, I just became aware of a lie told about me last week, and my first response was, "Wait a minute, that's the furthest thing from the truth. Come on. How can you believe this character over me?" That's our first response. We want to bark back, and we do. That's still a lesson I have not yet learned from Jesus. But to my defense, I'm not Jesus, right? However, I'm supposed to try to be like Jesus, right? And so this is a lesson that we need to learn. And when people talk trash about us and make false accusations against us and talk poorly about us, oh, the difficult thing to do is to zip it. Even the book of Ecclesiastes tells us with great wisdom, there's a time to speak up and a time to be silent. Jesus, being full of wisdom, stood before Pilate and said nothing. And the scriptures here say that Pilate was amazed. I'm pretty sure there weren't many things that would amaze Pilate. But having this man, Jesus, stand before him and say nothing truly was amazing to him. There's a time to speak up and a time to be silent. This is a lesson we need to learn. God, give me the wisdom and the grace and the discernment when to speak up and when to be silent. But silence makes us uncomfortable, doesn't it? I talk in my spiritual formation class how we are addicted to noise. We really are. Silence makes us uneasy. I'm going to do a little experiment this morning. I'm going to get my timer out. And for 60 seconds. Now, 60 seconds is a minute. It's not a lot of time. But for 60 seconds, and I know we've got kids in here, so it might be a little tough, but that's okay. We're going to try to be as silent as we can. 60 seconds. It's only a minute. And as we do this experiment, I want you to be just aware of how uncomfortable the silence makes us. You're going to get uneasy, but let's try this experiment. Ready? 60 seconds, starting now. Thank you. 60.66 seconds. I don't know about you, but that seemed like an eternity. That seemed like forever. It was just 1 minute. But it proves my point that we are addicted to noise. I caught myself the other day. I had the TV on, I had the computer on, and I was on my phone. And I thought to myself, this is crazy. And then I was reminded that the times that I have heard God's voice most clearly in my life was in silence. We want to hear God's voice. We want to be able to do the right thing. We want to do the will of God. But it's impossible with the noise around us. We are truly addicted to noise. And I would venture to say that the times you've heard God's voice most clearly was when you shut out the noise in your life. All the noise. The loud, white, background, forefront noise. And you were alone with God in an extended period of time in solitude and silence. I would venture to say, in those times that you've heard God's voice most clearly, was in silence. Jesus knew when to speak, and he knew when to be silent. And this passage here reminds us that there is more power in silence than we will ever understand. Those 60 seconds were very uncomfortable for us. If we heard a loud crash outside or heard people yelling and screaming outside, our first response is to gravitate towards the noise. What is going on? We have to learn to discipline ourselves, to hear the voice of God, and to meet with God in the silence. Now, we contrast the silence of Jesus with the noise of the mob that had gathered there that day as Pilate put before the people these two men. Jesus on our left and Barabbas on our right. Now, we've talked in the past, and I think we all know, that Jesus on our left was an innocent man. He had no business being up there. Barabbas on the other side had every reason to be up there. He was an insurrectionist, a murderer. He was a bad dude. Yesterday was All Saints Day. Barabbas was no saint. He was the anti-saint. He was a bad guy. You would not want him to your home for dinner because you'd have items missing from your home. Your livelihood would be in danger. Barabbas was a bad dude. And the noise of the crowd, as Pilate is saying to the people, well, what do you want me to do? Who should I release for you? Now, think of the absolute absurdity of this. The people knew that Jesus was innocent, and they knew who Barabbas was. And yet the noise, the craziness of the noise, clouded their judgment. There was this mob mentality, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him, release Barabbas, release Barabbas, release Barabbas. It was crazy and noisy and chaotic. Noise will do that to you. Noise will cloud your judgment. Noise will make you do things that rationally does not make sense. And those people got caught up in this crazy, crazy mob mentality. This last week, just by chance, I was reading this book entitled Noise, written by some scientists and psychologists and social scientists. And the subtitle of the book, Noise, a Flaw in Human Judgment. And the premise of this book is fascinating. They take a very detailed look, and they look at every industry you can think of. Education, the justice system, government, medicine, education, the list goes on and on and on. And they make a very clear, compelling case that the noise that we surround ourselves in, the noise that we live in, flaws our judgment and colors our judgment and our bias. And more often than not, more often than we'd like to admit, we end up making the wrong choice because we are influenced by the craziness of the noise around us. Let me just read to you just some experts from this really fascinating book. They talk about finding ways to reduce the noise in our lives so that we can make fairer, clearer judgments. And they use the term decision hygiene. Let me read to you what they mean by that. Our main suggestion for reducing noise in judgment is decision hygiene. We chose this term because noise reduction, like health hygiene, is prevention against an unidentified enemy. Hand washing, for example, prevents unknown pathogens from entering our bodies. In the same way, decision hygiene will prevent errors without knowing what they are. Decision hygiene is as unglamorous as its name and certainly less exciting than a victorious fight against predictable biases. There may be no glory in preventing an unidentified harm, but it is very much worth doing. And let me just read one more excerpt about how we need to learn to reduce the noise in our lives. Imagine what organizations would look like if they were redesigned to reduce noise. Hospitals, hiring committees, economic forecasters, government agencies, insurance companies, public health authorities, criminal justice systems, law firms, and universities would be keenly alert to the problem of noise and strive to reduce it. Noise audits would be routine. They might be undertaken every year. Leaders of organizations would use algorithms either to replace human judgment or to supplant it in far more areas than they do today. People would break down complex judgments into simpler mediating assessments. They would know about decision hygiene and follow its prescriptions. Meetings would look very different. Discussions would be more structured. An outside view would be more systematically integrated into the decision process. The result would be a less noisy world. And get this. It would save a great deal of money, improve public safety and health, increase fairness, and prevent many avoidable errors. We live in a noisy world, and that clouds our judgment. It clouds our decision making. And what we see here in this passage with this crazy mob is crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. And you can hear the chants getting louder, the noise getting crazier. And then with Barabbas, release him, release him, release him. And they got their wish. Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. I want to talk to you a little bit about the atonement. In many ways, this passage is perfect for us as we prepare our hearts for Holy Communion. Atonement is that study in theology that helps us understand, why would Jesus put himself in this position? Why would Jesus willingly put himself in this position? Jesus did this on his own. He knew that he would be arrested and put on trial and eventually killed. Why would Jesus do that? He did it because he switched places with Barabbas. And we are Barabbas. We belong up there because of our sin. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. We are the guilty ones. Barabbas represents us. We fall short. We are sinners. And Jesus, because of his great love for humanity, Jesus, because of his great love for you, regardless of how bad your sin is, whether you steal candy bars or whether you embezzle thousands of dollars from the government, we are all sinners. And because of Christ's great love for humanity, he said, I'll switch with them. God did not pour out his judgment on Jesus. I know there are believers who think that. God did not intentionally pour his wrath upon Jesus. No, Jesus willingly put himself in this position and said, God, let me take the punishment. of these people who I love. Let me be the sacrifice. Let me switch between Barabbas and myself. And let me offer myself in their place. That, my friends, is the greatest switch in all of history. That Jesus would do this for us. Let me share with you some Bible verses. In 2 Corinthians 5:21, the Apostle Paul says, "He who had no sin, Jesus, became sin for us." That's the great switch. That Christ, who knew no wrongdoing, took our place on our behalf. And in Galatians chapter 3, we read these incredible verses. Verse 13, "Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us." I want to close this morning by reading the passage that I began the service with in Hebrews chapter 12. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross." I have one more picture to show you. They sent me this picture as we were singing this morning. This is Noah finishing the race just today in New York City. And if Noah can run the New York City Marathon and finish the race, we too can keep on running this race of faith.
Hi, I'm John Hanna, pastor of All Things Good, a church that believes in the goodness of God. We are located on the corner of 18th and E Street in Springfield, and our Sunday morning service is 11 o'clock a.m. For more information about our church, you can visit our website at springfieldchurch.org. We look forward to meeting you, and I hope you have a great day.